from KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. 600,000 more jobs were lost last month, the worst figure in over 30 years. And one set of workers may be feeling particularly vulnerable these days, older employees. Because they're often more highly paid, they may be more likely to be laid off. And that's created yet another ripple effect, a boom in age discrimination claims. One local example, more than 100 older workers were laid off from Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory last year, and now they're challenging their dismissal. Coming up, we take up the topic of age discrimination in a time of high anxiety. That's ahead on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Last year, Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory laid off over 400 of its employees. And now some of those former workers are fighting back by filing suit, saying they were the victims of age discrimination. The lab denies the charge, saying they followed federal law in making their staff reductions. The case appears to be part of a growing trend. Laid-off workers at both Ethan Allen Furniture and Dell Computer also filed age discrimination lawsuits last year. So in a time of high economic anxiety, the new jobless figures out this morning show unemployment now up to 7.6%, are older workers more vulnerable? This morning on Forum, we take up that question, and we want to start out with a short set of interviews focusing on the Lawrence Livermore story first. Joining us right now, Mariana Barraza, who worked at the lab for 38 years and was laid off last year at the age of 57. Mariana, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Tell us first what happened to you that day when you got the news.
Well, I start work at 7 o'clock, so I was there turning on the computer, and my back faced the door. So I felt someone was there, so I turned around, and I saw my division manager and my supervisor. And we knew several weeks before that this was going to happen to those people that were being let go. So I turned around, and I believe my first words is, you have to be kidding. And they shut the door, and they said, no, it's because of the business unit, and Kelly is her division is considered the business unit, and it has to do with the four-digit classification code. And I kind of just ignored all that because, I mean, I knew the lab policy was by seniority base, and I said, well, how can this be? I mean, how does a person with 38 years get laid off? I mean, I have more years than anyone in the department. And I believe there's maybe like 150 or so in the department. They wouldn't address the seniority thing. All they kept referring to was the business unit and the classification code.
And Mariana, was that to you then the indicator that there was something unfair going on because, in your view at least, seniority was not being adhered to?
Right, right. I always thought, you know, and we were talking since it's been going, the transition been going on for a couple of years now, you know. I mean, you know, we would be talking about, well, gee, you're safe. I mean, someone with, you know, that many years, I mean, there's just no way. So then they gave me this envelope, that letter, you know, that I was being let go. And then they had someone else come in, a personnel administrator, and handed me a couple of boxes, and I was told to pack my stuff and not to get back on the computer. And I had basically an hour to pack 38 years worth of stuff.
So it happened, obviously, very quickly. That 38-year experience then came to a close. What was it, though, now that's made you decide to go forward with this age discrimination suit?
It's the principle of the thing, you know, that how can they do this? I was, you know, dedicated, a loyal employee, you know, went to work. I mean, there's no cause for them to let me go. You go through the performance appraisals, you know, exceeds expectations throughout my career. So there's nothing there for them to use against me. And the other thing is, you know, what they did, I felt was wrong. The other thing, my daughter works there, and I don't want this to happen to her someday.
Hmm. Marian Barraza, who worked at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory for 38 years and was laid off last year at the age of 57, now part of a group of employees there who are challenging those job actions by saying that they were the victims of age discrimination. Marian Barraza, thanks for starting us out this morning on this topic, and best of luck to you in the future.
Thank you.
Joining us now is Linda Seaver. She's communications manager at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. Linda Seaver, you heard Marian Barraza make this basic point that, in her view, this was undeserved. She was a senior employee, had given dedicated service for a very long time, and that she was someone who was almost 60 years of age. Defend why Lawrence Livermore proceeded in the way that it did.
Well, first of all, listening to her, you know, I'd have to say, I mean, as a laboratory employee, I certainly sympathize. I sympathize with all the employees who were dismissed last year. But unfortunately, our laboratory needed to go through a workforce restructuring. We had a $300 million shortfall in operating costs, and we tried to do that by tightening up some business operations. When that didn't work, we needed to offer a voluntary buyout. We didn't get the number of employees we were hoping to get to avoid the involuntary. So in May, we had to resort to an involuntary buyout. The way we go about doing that, as you heard, was through the job codes and work units. And for some employees, for some, that can be a little confusing because sometimes in your particular unit, if it is targeted for possible reduction, you could have people with a large amount of seniority as opposed to other work units that were determined to be not a part of the workforce restructuring.
So is your essential view then that for someone like Marian Barraza and the others who are challenging this, that they're confused as opposed to being discriminated against?
What I can tell you is the laboratory worked very closely under the federal guidelines that we're required to follow when it comes to a workforce restructuring. It's known as a 3161. That's the code for it. And when you need to go through a workforce restructuring, you basically have to spell out what you're going to do. And there are a very careful set of regulations or rules that you have to follow. And that's what we follow. Department of Energy was certainly aware of that. And unfortunately, it culminated with the workforce reduction.
Last question. The attorney who represents the laid-off workers makes the point that, it's his estimation at least, that 94% of those who were laid off were over the age of 40, 40 mm-hmm. being sort of the magic number in terms of who's protected in age discrimination cases, which sort of makes your eyebrows go up. But respond to that in terms of sort of what that says about the overall context of the workforce at Lawrence Livermore.
Well, for our national laboratory and many of the other national laboratories, most of the workforce is over 40. More than 94% of our laboratory is 40 or over. And in fact, the average age at the laboratory is 50.
So again, from your standpoint, none of this had anything to do with getting rid of people because they were more highly paid, because they were older, because they were more experienced. It was just focused on those units that you decided were the ones that could least be – were least necessary as you went forward?
Absolutely. What's most important, we value our employees. We always consider them our greatest asset. We have been down these paths before where we face budget shortfalls. A voluntary – an involuntary layoff is the last thing that we want to resort to. In fact, the last time we had to do this was about 30 years ago. And so when we go through this, we want to be very careful. We look at it, make sure we still maintain the skills mix we need to accomplish our national security missions. So we're very careful in making sure that we're doing everything correct.
Linda Seaver, communications manager at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. Thank you. Thanks for being with us this
You're
morning.
You're welcome.
We're going to widen our conversation out now and talk more about this particular concern, again, under these difficult economic times when more and more people are facing the prospect of unemployment. Are older workers particularly vulnerable? And if so, what are some of the things that can be done that will protect them? What are some of the things that lawyers and employers think about as they go through this process to make sure that things are not done in any kind of discriminatory manner? Joining us now to take up this topic for the rest of our hour is Marcy Pitt Katsoufis. She directs the Sloan Center on Aging at Work at Boston College. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much, Dave.
Here, too, is Brad Yamauchi. He teaches employment law at Golden Gate Law School here in San Francisco, and he's also a partner in the firm of Minami and Tamaki. Brad Yamauchi, good morning.
Good morning.
And joining us also by telephone this morning, Thomas McInerney. He is a labor and employment law specialist who represents employers in discrimination cases. Tom McInerney, thanks for being with us as well.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk about this case, not so much the specifics of it, Brad, first, but whether this signifies, I guess, a broader trend. When you look at what's going on with the Lawrence Livermore case, is it to you representative of something that is happening more broadly?
Yes, and it's certainly connected to the demographics of the workforce that is getting older, particularly the baby boom generation. But from the perspective of the employee, you can see that there are motives or pressures on the employer to get rid of older employees. There are such things as stereotyping that the older you get, the less productive you are, the more you are paid. And if the more you are paid, if they eliminate an older worker at a higher rate, you could get two younger workers at the same salary or compensation. The other thing is the investment in training. Because the new technologies involved, many times the employer does not want to invest in the training of an older worker who may be gone in 5 or 10 years. Finally, there is the added cost of compensation or benefits. The older workers may use more in terms of workers' compensation or insurance benefits. So all these motives and stereotyping push employers sometimes to make decisions that may be intentionally or unintentionally based on age.
And Thomas McInerney, take us from the other point of view as employers look at these things. You heard what Brad Yamauchi was saying about all of the things that sort of make older employees in some ways less desirable in these difficult times. How are employers looking at these cases?
Well, employers are, like everybody else, are facing, you know, severe economic pressure, especially in such a, you know, economic climate that we have right now, that they are looking at all avenues of, and oftentimes just staying in business. They're looking at all ways to save costs and the like. And I would disagree with Brad in that they're, at least I think most employers that I work with are trying to do the right thing by looking at all avenues before you even get to a layoff, such as, you know, reducing hours or furloughing employees for limited periods of time, or looking at other cost savings that don't affect employees, because as one of the person said earlier, employees are seen as the most valuable asset for a company. And so, and then it's only when you've exhausted all these other avenues that they oftentimes then go to the reductions in force. And by and large, what they look at are all avenues and all departments, and not just in a way to avoid even leaving a suggestion of some sort of discrimination. We're not only talking about older workers, but, you know, trying to avoid claims or you know, that may be raised by others in other protected classes, women or minorities and the like. And so you're trying to they look at doing it in a way to reduce costs, but in a way to avoid legal claims such as this. You know, the age discrimination claims that are, you know, being raised here, there's a panoply of federal law and state law dealing with age discrimination. So they're, you know, with a lot of legal requirements that employers go through in order to reduce the workforce in a way that, you know, avoids age discrimination, or at least even the suggestion of age discrimination.
Thomas McInerney, he is a partner in the firm of Ogletree and Deacon, specializing in this issue, representing employers in these cases. Marcy Pitt Katsoufis joins us as well at the Sloan Center on Aging and Work at Boston College. What do we know about what's going on nationwide? Are you seeing this bubble up more and more? Are we seeing more unemployment among older Americans in a disproportionate way?
Well, let me first by saying that I think that this issue certainly is being looked at more, as was mentioned, because there are more older workers, not only in proportion, but there has been a trend for them to indicate an interest of extending their employment beyond the traditional retirement years. So I think that there is an understandable interest in the topic, and given our economic situations, particular concern. I think that there are a few things to think about is that when we look at age discrimination or bias, the relationship that the employee has with the employer goes over time, so that there is concern when there's hiring going on. There certainly may be some concerns when the person's at the workplace, and as you've talked about, particularly during times of layoffs. From a research point of view, I think that when you ask employees about this, surveys would suggest that higher percentages of employees are aware of their own perceptions of possible age discrimination when they're going through a hiring process. And so that's particularly concerning now, because older workers who are looking for work are looking at it at a time when many people are scrambling, certainly, for work. And it has historically taken longer for older workers to get a job if they've been laid off.
Marcy Pitt-Kasufis, she directs the Sloan Center on Aging and Work at Boston College. Brad Yamauchi is someone who represents employees in age discrimination cases and other discrimination cases. Is this a particularly tough one to prove, age discrimination?
Well, in the layoff context, it is very difficult. In the Lawrence Livermore case, if it is a class action, obviously they would look at statistics to see whether those statistics would normally occur in the absence of discrimination.
Although, as we heard, they have an older workforce to start with. So the fact that 94% were over the age of 40 is really the norm, because that's what their workforce is.
That would be one of the elements that would be a hurdle for the plaintiffs to overcome to explain whether there is statistical disparity in that decision-making process. But in terms of plaintiffs in general and age discrimination cases, it all boils down to the same type of analysis for any type of discrimination case. That is, the articulated reasons for the termination or the layoff of individuals must be justified on legitimate grounds. The plaintiffs have the opportunity to prove that those reasons are not true. In the context of mass layoffs, many employers refer to consulting companies to evaluate their workforce to try and obtain and articulate objective reasons why a certain person should be terminated or certain division should go. The more you get subjective criteria such as performance, incentives, attitude, things like that, the more the law looks at that and juries look at that to see whether or not those are just excuses to eliminate those workers who are unwanted, whether it be on age or disability or other classifications.
I'm curious about where the sort of burden of proof, if that's even the right legal phrase to use, Tom McInerney, in this sort of thing. As I looked at recent court cases on this, Supreme Court cases in particular, it seems like there's actually been a trend to say the burden is more on the employers to show that this was something that was not discriminatory, and that the rulings of the Roberts courts, to the surprise of some, to the Roberts Supreme Court, have actually leaned on the side of workers. Do you see it that way?
I think this is definitely an evolving area, and it's going to continue to evolve as the workforce gets older. I think the general legal standard is the employee has an initial burden to show what's called a prima facie case that satisfies certain elements to leave an inference that age discrimination was involved in the decision. Then the burden shifts to the employer to articulate a legitimate business reason for the termination or whatever the other adverse employment action is. And then it shifts back to the employee to then show that that legitimate reason is really just pretextual for the for age discrimination. And it's that last element that is there's been a lot of recent case law on, and that deals with the issue of what does an employee actually have to show. And, you know, but at bottom, when you're in front of a jury defending these claims, a jury is going to be looking very closely at what the employer's legitimate reason is. And that's why it's very important for employers before they take this action to establish that they have documentation and that they have a justifiable reason for the decision, because oftentimes a jury and even some courts are going to be skeptical of an employer's justification if it's not well documented.
And as I understand it, it's not necessary for an employee to prove that this was intentional age discrimination. There just has to be proof that this action had a disparate or unfair impact on the particular class, in this case, older workers. Is that right?
Right. And you're dealing with two different ways to prove age discrimination. The one I laid out deals with disparate treatment. So that's where you do have to show intentional discrimination. But an alternative way is by looking at statistics and the like, where you can show it does have a disparate impact. A decision like a layoff has had a disparate impact on a on a protected class on a broad basis, and that's where issues of statistics and the like can come in. And there's also some legislation currently pending that will make that somewhat easier to prove for plaintiffs as well. So there are two different ways of establishing age discrimination.
And Marcy Kasusa, as you look at this issue, are there things that older workers now need to be particularly aware of? I mean, what should older workers be paying attention to so that they are less vulnerable?
Well, I think there's the before and the after to be thinking about. Certainly, it was mentioned before that one of the issues we're dealing with would be stereotypes or age bias. And certainly as employees go through their careers and life course, to be aware that sometimes there's some mistaken assumptions that either coworkers or supervisors might be making, so that they can be sure to communicate both their enthusiasm and interest in a job. Sometimes people might, for example, make a mistaken assumption that older workers are really pacing themselves and looking toward retirement, when in fact they're quite invested in their careers. So to communicate that is really an important kind of proactive step. On the other end, if older workers are looking for jobs, they certainly want to be sure that they make an effort to communicate how their skills and experiences are updated and relevant, so that, again, people don't go back to the kinds of stereotypes that might be disadvantageous to older workers.
We have to take a break in just a moment. But Brad Yamauchi, does that mean that there are particular fields where older workers are particularly vulnerable? If one of the concerns is you're getting older, you're just kind of putting in your time, we don't really want to invest in you, does that mean that older workers who are in fields that are changing quickly, fields, for example, here in the Bay Area, where there's lots of technologically based employment, have to be particularly aware of that and say, I'm ready to go?
Well, my experience in Silicon Valley and high-tech firms across the country indicate that many employers have cultures of youth oriented on the technologies, the new technologies, use of gadgets, use of different language. And if the older worker can't adapt to that environment and get the training and compete in that environment, they are going to be perceived as dinosaurs.
And are you seeing more of these claims come to your firm from those sorts of environments?
I get the calls of employees or older employees recognizing the symptoms. All of a sudden, there's a change in attitude toward them, or they're being demoted and given less responsibility. And they get concerned that age may be a motive, and this is the context in which we talk about it.
Let's pause and take our break and light up our phone lines. If you have interests about this topic, concerns about this topic, if you're an older worker and are worried about what the future may portend, you can join us now. Here's the number. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Or if you're an employer and you're wrestling with these issues, give us a call at 866-733-6786. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, age discrimination in these difficult and anxiety-provoking times of ours, with unemployment inching up, announced this morning, now up to 7.6% nationwide, 600,000 jobs lost in the past month. Are older workers particularly vulnerable? And are there things that older workers should be doing to protect their job status? How do employers contend with this difficult situation? That's our topic this morning. We welcome your participation, too. The number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. Marcy Pitt Kasufis at the Sloan Center on Aging and Work at Boston College. You heard Brad Yamauchi before the break talk about how older workers in high-tech fields may be particularly vulnerable because of the sort of a culture of youth and an emphasis on new gadgetry and new technology. Is that your sense as well?
Well, I think both company to company and industry sector to industry sector, there do exist these cultures, cultures of innovation and of risk-taking. But I think one of the things that, in one sense, goes across or transcends specific companies is the emphasis on continuous learning. And although I think in our country we've talked about it a lot, it's been more difficult for organizations and individuals to figure out how to take that to heart, given the fact that how we work is changing so rapidly. I think it would certainly be to all employees' advantage to be sure that their skills are up to date, much like the same way we're trying to create a culture of investing in retirement. As soon as the 22-year-olds enter the door, we want to create, I think, a certain culture that for employees across their career stages, that we don't take it for granted that the skills that we start with are necessarily going to last us for a lifetime.
And let's hear from some of our listeners, both on the employee and on the employer side this morning on this topic. We'll start with Ray in Sunnyvale. Ray, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say I've worked in software for a while. I think companies that have a culture of youth, what they're sometimes really doing is asking their workers to work at a pace that's not sustainable. Young kids, they don't know this. Companies go through these young kids. They'll burn them out in a year, but they'll keep pumping new kids through. And older workers know to stay away from that kind of environment. So there is a culture of work. They do try to make it fun, but, you know, they're working at a non-sustainable pace.
Ray, thanks. Thanks for the observation. Brad Yamauchi, what do you think of that thought? He's essentially that employers want younger workers because, in a sense, they can take advantage of them.
Well, certainly that's true in many situations I see. For the older worker, I think the challenge here is there are expectations, and there are expectations that can be reasonable and legitimate and those that are designed to burn people out and to get rid of them. And I think that's the difference. What is the motive for these expectations at work?
And to Mike, who joins us in Castro Valley. Mike, you're on.
Yes, I heard one of your speakers earlier comment that employers are doing their best to try anything besides layoffs, and they're doing it because they're trying to stay in business. And I have to disagree with that somewhat. For one thing, I'm 50. We just had a layoff yesterday. I was safe, but a lot of people were not.
Where do you work, Mike? What kind of employment do you have?
I work in technology.
Okay.
So I'm well aware of these issues. So one thing, if employers are trying their best to stay in business, why is it that companies like Microsoft, who are making billions of dollars, are having layoffs? And the obvious answer to me is because if they don't show a steady growth of income, the stock doesn't rise high enough, and they don't get their huge $20 million bonuses for the executives.
Mike, thanks. Tom McInerney, why don't you respond to that, I think, probably widespread sort of perception and concern?
Right. I mean, it's, with all due respect, I think is the comment is somewhat simplistic in looking at how a business is going to be operating and how they try to stay in business. There's constant, just because you have a large company that maybe has executives that make a lot of money, which, you know, obviously upsets people, and I fully appreciate that and oftentimes share in that, you have companies that are also in different divisions and subsidiaries and the like are, you know, there's some part of the business may be expanding, some are drastically reducing. And in running a company, the people that are making these decisions are constantly having to shift resources and the like in order to maybe, you know, one arm of the business, and just take Microsoft, maybe have the desktop sales or their software sales are drastically reducing, and there's just less of a demand there, but they shift resources to other divisions where there may be more of a growth there. And by and large, it's extremely rare, and when I counsel employers, where you have a situation where somebody may say, well, I just want to get rid of the older people, or we're trying to save money, let's get rid of the people making the highest amount of money. By and large, you have people, well-meaning people, just like us, you know, your neighbor and the like, are in these jobs that are trying to make very tough decisions in order to, you know, stay in business and continue and just exist, and they're facing a lot of different challenges, and so they are trying to do the right thing. And by doing the right thing, that may sometimes result in having to reduce headcount and, you know, just reduce the number of employees, and then hopefully next year then they expand and grow again. But it's constant economic pressure, which I know it sounds somewhat antiseptic to talk about it in that way, but that's kind of the nature of, you know, business. So you can ultimately get on a financial footing where you can have growth and greater employment. You just have to look at overall the employment numbers have drastically reduced. Just today in the paper,
the
unemployment rate is just continuing to go through the roof. And this is facing all sectors, not just technology, but every sort of business in this country.
Thomas McInerney, he's an attorney with Ogletree and Deakins, represents employers in these sort of discrimination cases. Marcy Pikasuvas, before we go to our next caller, I just am curious about your response to both the feelings of our last caller, Mike in Castro Valley, and Tom McInerney's response, and the idea that, like it or not, this is what employers have to do, even though it sounds sort of antiseptic. As someone who focuses on these issues for older workers and who may face consequences that are not antiseptic at all, how do you view that?
Well, I'll give you a little bit of a story and then can elaborate as the callers, you know, would feel appropriate. 2 or 3 years ago, when our center began conversations with employers about older workers, the economy, of course, was stronger. Many of them were looking at opportunities to leverage the experience and the strengths of their older workers. And even in those very good times when we would ask a question such as, how are you talking about this at the workplace, most of them would respond saying, well, of course we don't talk about age. And I think that there are two problems that they're facing, one of which is they're dancing around what they perceive might be concerns of the law. But in our country, we don't have a polite way, essentially, of talking about age, certainly at the workplace. And as a consequence, I think that the two perspectives that have just been discussed kind of coexist simultaneously. I think that certainly the larger and enlightened employers are simultaneously trying to respect the law and also recognize that the future, if you will, of their companies depends on having the right people see them through to the other side.
So in a sense, it sounds like you're arguing this is something that's a bit invisible, that people are kind of afraid to talk about because of the potential consequences, but talk about it is exactly what we need to do?
Well, exactly right. That is a little bit some of the dilemma, and I think that the difficulty discussing it comes from both the sides, if you will, of the employer as well as the employees.
Back to our calls. Paul in San Francisco has our next thought. Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm an employer in the Bay Area. I'm in one of those youth culture-oriented organizations. It's a marketing firm. And I have to tell you, you don't know the hand-wringing and sleepless nights that go along with laying people off, whether it's one person or a group. And I think employers, particularly on smaller companies, is all I can speak of. I've been in management circles for 20 years now. And it is the most difficult thing you've ever done. And I would almost propose that in a youth culture, oftentimes, it's not an age issue so much as it is a life stage issue. And there's almost a reverse age discrimination, if you will, that occurs where the person who has the family and the mortgage is protected, and three people who are young, fresh out of school, youngsters, single people with no mortgage that maybe are perceived to be resilient, are the ones that end up getting laid off because there's this collective feeling, and I guess it comes from more of the heart, if that applies in this whole awful situation, that this person will bounce back, whereas the poor guy with the, you know, single parent or the guy with a couple of kids and a mortgage will not.
Right.
So I've seen the opposite occur.
Yeah, and it sounds like, Paul, that this is something you've agonized over.
Agonized. You wouldn't believe. I mean, all the stress of running a business, I now own my own company, cannot even compare to that decision that has to happen eventually. And it's for the health of the rest of the organization. If we feed an ecosystem of families and people, and if we don't take care of that, precious ecosystem, everybody's in jeopardy, and all the families are in jeopardy. We're talking 150 families would be in trouble. And so you have to look at it that way.
Paul, thanks. Thanks for the call and the observation. Good to hear your point of view on this. Brad Yamauchi, when you hear someone like Paul agonizing over that and factoring in these other things, gosh, this person has a mortgage, this person has children, I want to be sensitive to that. This person does not. Can you do that legally? I mean, is Paul being as sensitive as that sounds in many ways, is that also dangerous?
Well, it's a dual-edged sword, obviously. When Paul talks about considering a guy with a family or a mortgage or kids, many times that's interpreted as gender discrimination, that the male then is favored in that situation or favored due to parental status or marital status. And that can be perceived as a discriminatory motive, favoring one person because of factors unrelated to job performance or merit.
Jasmine in Oakland has our next thought. Jasmine, go ahead. You're on, please.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm an employer in education, and my concern is that I deal with a lot of younger staff who have this entitlement issue when it comes to employment. Oh, I'm younger, and I can do this job better. I have more energy. And I'm just wondering, what are the employment areas where being an older employee is actually beneficial? Because I'm worried that we're just going to feed into this culture of entitlement.
Jasmine, thanks. Thanks. What should older workers be thinking about just from a strategic point of view, Marcy Pitt Kasufis? Are there fields where it older employees have an advantage?
Well, let me see if I can answer that by some results of, again, some studies we've done, gathered some information from employers that I think it would directly answer your caller's question in terms of the perceptions that employers might have of older workers. And it's very interesting that it's kind of simultaneously both some concerns they express as well as some very positive assessments. I'll give you one quick example is that employers are more likely to say, for instance, that their late career workers have more extensive client networks. Well, you know, employers are aware of that, and if they depend on those networks, they actually do value the older workers. On the other hand, of course, they may feel that their younger workers bring different kind of assets. I think the conclusion that employers make is they really need workers across generations and across age groups rather than pitting one against the other.
Marcy Pitt Kasufis at the Sloan Center on Aging and Work at Boston College. Some of our listeners emailing in their thoughts. You can say whatever you please, but without unions, employees in the vast majority will have no refuge. You can't rely on the employers to be nice to older workers. Eli writes in, I've been in the technology industry for over 10 years. I've seen several cases where the more experienced and more expensive employees have been let go, and the brain drain effect is very damaging. Roberta writes, I've yet to hear of an employer that admitted to discriminating against an employee due to age or race or sexual orientation. Obviously, they do that since they lose or settle these suits all the time. In the case of multiple layoffs within a particular company, it is possible that it's cheaper to pay the cost of a defense rather than continuing to employ older employees. What do you think of that, Tom McInerney? Would that really be true, that it would be easier to go to court than it would be to keep on older employees?
I've never heard that. I've never heard an employer articulate that or even suggest that. I think by and large, most employers would go the other way and decide that they want to do whatever they can to avoid having any sort of lawsuits. It's just, I think, human nature. And, you know, the other thing that they often factor in is, well, if we do this, we know we're at risk. Even though we're doing the right thing, there's a risk here, but we'd rather not go to court because then that's going to tie up, you know, people are going to have to testify in court and the like. So they end up, you know, maybe erring on the side of not making a very tough but possibly a right decision in the employment context just to avoid going to court.
And we welcome more of your thoughts on this provocative question during this anxious time. You can join us now at 866-733-6786, or you can email us your thoughts at forum@kqed.org, forum@kqed.org. And to Laura next in Pleasanton. Laura, go ahead, please.
Hi. I'm calling as an employer, and the issues that come up for me with hiring older people, and I'm 65, so I'm not young, is that we run into a lot of power struggles where they feel like they already know how to do this job. You can't tell them. They're fearful of change. You know, technology frightens them. You try to get them involved and find ways to encourage them and empower them to learn the new technology or learn the new technique, and they're extremely resistant. Now, not all of them, but in general, I have found, and my experience has been, when I hire someone who is with a lot of experience, has been in the business for, you know, all these years, they know what they're doing, and it's really hard to tell them any different.
Laura, thanks. Thanks for the call and observation. Brett Yamauchi, now looking at the other side of this, the hiring as opposed to the layoff process, but you're nodding your head. Even as someone who works in defending employees, that had a familiar ring to you?
Sure. We've all heard the phrase, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And the fact is that that really isn't an age issue. It's an attitude issue. It can be a young person who thinks they know everything and wants to do it their way creatively and doesn't want to follow the rules. It can be an older person who feels they know the field and believe that they have more to teach people at the company, and they don't want to be told what to do either.
But does it say something, Marcy Pitt-Kasufis, to you that older workers need to be aware of as they're going out looking for jobs, that they need to signal a readiness for the future as opposed to signaling, I know everything?
Well, you know, attitudes are tricky things, and I think that a situation happens. The reason we sometimes fall back on stereotypes, whether they're positive or negative, is that it helps us figure it out. The quick example, of course, is the recent experience with the flight that landed in the Hudson, and everybody interpreted the experience of that pilot in a very positive light, saying, oh, it's good that he brought that experience. So when things end up in a very positive way, we're grateful for that. As the caller mentioned, of course, if a negative thing comes forward and we attribute it to some characteristic, we want to be very careful that rather than thinking of it being experience, that we quickly think that it's because of age. And certainly older workers, as they have a situation where they think the cause might be age bias, to be able to help them tease out as they're discussing this, you know, with the supervisor, gosh, you know, I think I bring this experience, I bring this excitement, is a very difficult conversation to have.
This is an interesting observation from one of our listeners who writes in. Certainly age discrimination is an issue in layoffs, but it's also an issue in hiring and infinitely more difficult to prove or seek a remedy for. My husband was a principal software engineer when he was laid off during the dot-com bust, and he had a terrible time finding a new job. It was clear that his age was a significant disadvantage. For example, the number of interviews he received went up dramatically when he made a single change, and that was taking his college graduation date off of his resume. We have to take a break for our pledge drive in just a moment. So some quick thoughts here from each of you before we conclude this portion of our program. Tom McInerney, first to you, what should employers really be paying attention to in this anxious time so that they do, we use the phrase and we've heard it on this program, do it the right way?
Well, I think everyone needs to, or all employers need to look at really what their needs are and whether they are valuing the important things that are required for their company, and look at try to develop a very diverse workforce. So as part of that, evaluate your workforce, determine whether or not it's diverse, and it's also meeting your needs. And the needs are maybe changing over time, so make sure that those that are making the hiring decisions are well aware of what the future bodes for this company, and that you're bringing in people that satisfy that, regardless of age or race or, you know, experience level or the like. And because I think everyone benefits from a very diverse workforce ultimately.
And briefly, Marcy Kasufis, it's often said during these times that we shouldn't let a crisis go to waste, that in a crisis there are opportunities. Can you think of this problem that way?
Well, it's an interesting framing, and I'm sure that the people who are listening to this, if they're facing unemployment, it would be hard to look at it as an opportunity. I do think from organizations, though, that probably is very true. I'll give you one example. Somebody mentioned that employers may express hesitance of investing in older workers, thinking that they'll be leaving in 5 or 6 years. In fact, turnover rates are higher among younger workers, rather than older workers. So there are opportunities for employers to rethink the kinds of supports that they give to people of all ages.
Well, let's hold it there at least for a moment, because this is Pledge Week for KQED Public Radio. We've been talking throughout this past hour about the questions involved in age discrimination. And if you'd like to support our efforts here at KQED Public Radio and want to find out more about how to do just that, you can go to kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. Continuing now for the balance of our program on the Sirius Satellite Network and for a rebroadcast of our show, we want to continue to take your calls and continue our conversation about this topic. Sue joins us next in Novato. Sue, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call, and I'm a KQED member. I want to address this directly. This situation just happened to me in the last 2 months. I worked for a very prominent nonprofit in Marin. And I was told to my face by the executive director that had she known my age, which is 60, she would never have hired me because my insurance was too expensive. And after that, things became so difficult there. The harassment was so bad, I had to quit. So to say that employees are valued, to say that it's hidden, is really not the truth. And my hearts go out to the people at Lockheed. I hope they win their suit.
At Lawrence Livermore, yeah.
Yeah, and thank you, Lawrence Livermore. This is endemic. And I hope more and more people feel empowered by your wonderful program today.
Sue, thanks for the call and the observation. Brad Yamauchi, what do you think of that sort of circumstance? If that employer indeed said that to Sue, what's her recourse?
Well, let me first say that I agree that most employers try to do the right thing, but the layoff context and the termination context provides the opportunity for those employers who want to discriminate or get rid of unwanted workers, either because of financial grounds or cost of insurance or absences due to illnesses. That's the opportunity. And the cover of layoffs is a very good cover, because economic spreadsheets show they have to take some people out. The question is, who do they choose and why do they choose them? That's the fight for litigation.
And to Nick, who joins us next in Redwood City. Nick, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks very much for the opportunity to speak. So I just wanted to add to the comparative perspective of young versus old. I'm mid-40s, so I don't know where I sit in that band, but the comment I wanted to make was that sometimes, from my personal experience in the tech industry, by the way, I was laid off from a large tech Silicon Valley entity some months ago, but sometimes the youthfulness and the perceived value for money for the recent training and so on of a younger employee can be outweighed by the greater focus on a career, maybe because of the lack of distractions a mature person has from a social life perspective, et cetera. And also, in my own case, I believe that a number of years' experience in different markets and different scenarios allows you to bring that multiplier factor when tackling a business challenge, and the multiplier factor in return on investment on the salary. I have a family, two young children, et cetera. My career is central. I don't have any big social distractions or anything. I'm pretty committed to delivering whatever I can deliver for an employer. So it's a pretty much 100% commitment with a multiplier factor of experience.
Nick, thanks. Thanks for the call. And good luck to you in your pursuits as well. Some of our other email thoughts coming in. Several years ago, I had a business with approximately 35 workers, mostly younger. I needed to lay off two people and gave them the choice of taking pay cuts and save the two jobs or lay off two people. They chose the layoffs. I don't think older workers would have had such short-term thinking. And Chana writes in, sorry, but I really resent being referred to as an older worker at the age of 56. When I think of an older worker, I think of folks 70 or 80 years old. We just have a moment or two left, but it's in a sense, it's not a bad point to end on, Marcy Pitt Kasufis, because we're aging in this country. And whether Chana understandably doesn't like that particular association, we will have increasingly, will we not, an older workforce?
Well, that certainly the demographics would suggest that that is the case, just because of the size of the baby boom generation. And we need to remember, of course, that the oldest of the baby boomers are just now reaching what we thought of as retirement age. So we have a couple of decades of this large generation to follow. The aging of the workforce is probably one of the most profound workforce trends that we've dealt with in a long time. And certainly both employees and employers are trying to adjust to it and to figure out ways of leveraging the assets, hopefully, that the older workers can bring.
And indeed, this will be an issue that we'll continue to think about, no doubt talk about further on this program in the future. Marcy Pitt Kasufis, the director of the Sloan Center on Aging and Work at Boston College. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Joining us as well was Thomas McInerney. He is a partner in the law firm of Ogletree and Deakins. He is an employment specialist who works on these issues from the point of view of employers. Thomas McInerney, thanks to you as well.
Thanks.
And Brad Yamauchi joined us as well. He teaches employment law at Golden Gate Law School, also a partner in the firm of Minami and Tamaki. Brad, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell, our engineer this hour, Danny Bringer. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.